a rock and roll party.
Come on, boy.
Abbey Road Records show.
Heavy metal, rock and roll is always going to be with us. Day after day, year after year, it's never going to die.
Who likes rock and roll? Yeah!
Abbey Road Records show.
Put down the boxing gloves and try and just get it together.
Well, so, episode 78.
78.
Yep, so break out your 76s.
Yes.
And let's put them on the upspeed turntable and...
Wait a minute, they don't have 76 records.
Not anymore, they don't.
Sure they do. My grandmother had 76s.
Oy, 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 oy. Episode 78.
And we got Stars, Violation playing as our intro record.
Yep.
Picked by Liz Morgan, who's back in the fold after a couple weeks vacation.
Good mistress here, yeah. Well, she and Mark, and Mark's here too. Mark Brooks is here, and they went to go hang out with, didn't you guys go see Queensryche, right? Now, that was Jeff Tate's Queensryche. That was a show. Yeah? I think on the show, we were talking about, well, Liz is gone. We miss her. And I go, yeah, she's banging Queensryche.
Yeah, that's right.
She's banging out, banging Queensryche.
She banged Queensryche.
Kind of felt, we felt cheated somehow. You know,
she didn't really bang Queensryche. She banged Jeff Tate's version of Queensryche.
Yeah, yeah.
We got in for free.
Come on, honey. You know what to do.
All right. Well, shall we just kick this baby off?
Let's do that.
Hey, Laba.
Hey, Laba.
The Shabby Road Record Show is on the air, your hipster-free vinyl podcast. I'm your host, Ryan McKay, and I'm joined by a man who's wanting your nomination because he has, quote, the biggest caucus, A.D. Adams.
It's downright presidential, my friend. Well, it's good to be back. I'm back from old Mexico. I'm tan, rested, and ready to rock. Well, actually, I'm pale, hungover, and ready to go have something checked out at the clinic down the street. But whatever. Whatever.
Either way.
How you been, Mr. McKay?
I'm great, Mr. Adams.
Yes.
What a weekend you must have had in Mexico.
It was spring break.
Oh, my God. Guess how many boobs I saw?
This old...
53.
This old... Why, if I could have boners anymore, I'd have had a few. My God. You know? Holy crap. But, you know, they sell Viagra. You can go down to the local freaking pharmacia. You can get Viagra for, like, you know, 10 cents a pop.
Wow. Literally 10 cents a pop.
No, I didn't. It was just more frustrating than anything else.
Well, thank you guys for tuning in. This is indeed episode number 78. Great to have you back here at Shabby Road. Thank you so much for sharing stuff and commenting and doing all the things that you do, leaving those iTunes reviews like you've been doing, and still a 5-star rated podcast somehow by the grace of God.
I just do not get that,
but only in Mexico.
We're not getting any better. Yeah, we're cheaper in Mexico.
We're marginally better, right?
I don't think. I don't know. I don't even know. I don't even know what. Because I still don't know what we're doing.
You know, this podcast. It's called a podcast.
We sit here and we play records and we have beers with our friends. And
of course, that's a lot of fun. Who wouldn't want to do that every
week? We just happen to have mics up
every week. We'd be doing it anyway. We just happen to put mics up.
Yeah. So I guess we're getting better.
Yeah. Marginally better, yes. Lateral move, maybe.
Well, I think more people are digging what we're doing. I remember when this whole thing started out, man. It was just, again, like a couple knuckleheads, you know, hanging out and playing records and talking about that and the value of the music and the roots that it came from and the connection that music makes, not only in a personal level, but professionally, how you can link one producer to three or four different bands, your favorite bands, but... You know, and trace what you like back further and further and further, and just exploring music and just for the love of freaking music, you know, you know, it's helped. I talk to a lot of my students about that, and we've had this conversation before, but, you know, if you expand your, you know, musical palette, it's almost like, have you tried, you know, eating this? Well, no, I haven't. Well, you got to taste it, man. Taste the stuff. It's good.
Right.
You know, so... Anyway.
Yeah, it's like when I was a kid and my guitar teacher said, this is kind of a blues riff. And I kind of curled my face up as if he was giving me some broccoli to eat. He's like, no, man, blues is cool. Blues is cool. And it wasn't long before I recognized that that's what Led Zeppelin is blues.
Sure.
You know, basically the first couple of records are old blues songs. And yes, blues is cool. You know, so it's definitely to explore different styles of music and not get necessarily locked into one thing is the way to go. Spice of life.
Yeah, I think you can find a connection with everything that you do. And certainly we do with what we play because we pull everything from our personal collections here. So
it kind of goes, how is your collection tonight? How is your mystery box, sir?
Well, that I guess that explains my little prelude there.
Oh,
my
boy.
Little it's out there.
Ride.
It's out there. I've got three completely different types of music going here. And it's interesting. So I'm running the gamut from like total doom metal.
Yeah.
To pre-prog pop to homestyle Arizona boogie-woogie.
Homestyle Arizona boogie-woogie.
Well, here's the thing with this. Two of the three artists in my mystery box I've actually worked with. So I'm kind of representing two artists from my personal local past who are big fucking deals and really cool to me.
Okay.
And have meant a lot of things to a lot of people. And I'm just going to leave it at that.
When you say pre-prog pop, what does that mean?
I have no fucking idea. Okay. I've
just
had
checking.
A few. And yeah.
Pre-prog. So pre-prog is going to be 60s.
Yeah, because, I mean, well, depending on when prog came
mid-60s.
Yeah, it could be mid to late mid-60s.
So it's 60s pop.
But
like Baroque?
Poppy, but remember,
Baroque pop? Is that what we're talking about?
Nope.
All right.
Nope. Just sugary, awesome little pop.
Pop. All right, cool.
By a prog legend.
Okay.
One of the most mysterious figures in all of progdom's history.
Progdom. All right. Well, I got something from a Casablanca.
Of course you do.
I love my Casablanca
yes,
records. I've recently acquired a new addition to my Casablanca collection.
Will it be a new Casablanca artist?
It's yes,
okay.
It is.
I
believe this band has been played once before on the Shabby Road Record Show.
I say Village People.
It's not Village People. It's not Kiss. It's not.
Well, you played Kiss, and so that
it's not Angel.
We've played Angel.
And so
it's a new band.
New for me. I've not brought them in. And this song is great. This record is really, really cool.
Good. Okay.
It's got a little,
play the record, okay?
It's got. I will, Casey.
In time. Casey.
And it's got a little.
And it's about a dying dog.
It's got a Detroit connection to it, so it's pretty cool. Blue Label Casablanca. Blue Label. That's the.
You're a freak like that.
It's the early, early Casablanca days.
Yep.
And then I brought a great little pub rock song.
That hit my eye.
I know. I know. I might need to bring my pop filter.
We should have a ding like a spittoon ricochet
right.
sound in there.
And and the last, I'll play this in the middle. A band from Birmingham.
God bless Birmingham.
Birmingham, England.
Yep.
It's Friday night in Birmingham.
Yep.
But it's not Uriah Heep. It's not Judas Priest. It's not Black Sabbath. It's not even a heavy metal band.
It could be ELO.
It's not ELO.
It could be The Move.
It could
be Idle Race.
It's not. You stop guessing. Well, one of the things that's going to wash these tracks down is a nice cold beer, and that's what we have down here tonight at Shabby Road, a little bit of beer from an individual that went to our website, shabbyroadrecordshow.com, where there's a PayPal link where you can indeed fill the fridge here at Shabby Road, which is greatly appreciated as it's getting hotter and hotter here in the desert.
Who would be crazy enough to get near anything of ours, pray tell?
Former Enabler Award winner, G-Man, Gary Gilson.
Hey.
I say former, but I mean last year's.
Yeah, last year's.
He's not former.
He's still the reigning champ. He still
he
holds
is.
The crown.
Yes,
he
and
has
he will
the trophy.
Be defending his crown. Coming up in a couple of weeks, Shabby Awards right around the corner, everyone.
Defending his crown. That was one of my films, Ryan.
Ooh.
Well played.
Don't take my mind there.
Actually, that was one of the rare films I actually didn't have a mustache.
Oh, you went clean shaven.
I was kind of, you know, I was a rebel at the time. It was unheard of.
It was. Did not go with the porn mustache.
No, I went full peach on that one.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let's say hello to our buddy Ricky Serrano, who's running the control over there. What's happening, Ricky?
Just doing this podcast.
You know? Can see that. Ricky and I, tomorrow night, are going to a concert.
Oh, you're going to Uli Roth.
Yes, we are. Uli John Roth is playing in Phoenix tomorrow, and Ricky and I will be attending.
Where's that? Is that Joe's Grotto?
Oh, yeah.
At Joe's Grotto, yes.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
That's cool, man.
So I'll give you a full report.
Yeah, on, you have to.
On Monday, Monday night. Huh?
How much is it?
It's $25.
You should track him down.
Scorpions.
Yeah, from the Scorpions, Uli.
I'll buy you a ticket.
Yeah. Okay. So now you're meeting. So Sean Hogan is here.
You guys should talk to people. We know people down there. Talk to somebody and get them to do a Shabby Road. Hey, this is Uli Roth. You're listening to Shabby Road.
That would be awesome. If I can get that, that would be really cool.
If not, I'll just do one and we can say it was him.
Yeah, you just did one. That's good.
Yeah, here we got it.
I'll put a little, we'll burn the sky. We'll put Virgin Killer underneath it and then we got it.
Hey, check it out.
Yeah. And Deuce is here too.
The Deuce is here. Yeah. He's good, man.
And
Luscious Liz, our liquid mistress, is here.
There she
back
is.
Back after a hiatus of God knows what.
Banging Queensryche, I believe.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yes, that's right. That's right. Jeff Tate's Queensryche.
Is that what a hiatus is?
It's a high something.
Woo! If you say so.
And, of course, Mark Brooks is here.
Well, full house here tonight.
Escorting her, making sure that she doesn't kick all of our asses.
That's right.
Yeah.
She will. Yep. She will. So thanks,
He's
G-Man.
He's actually our bodyguard. Really.
So thanks, G-Man, for the beer. There's an 18-pack sitting here. Compliments of the great Gary Gilson. So thank you, brother.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love you, brother.
And so now I guess it's time to decide who will go first. Who will be the first to pull a record out of the mystery box? And who should we make pick? None of the schlubs over there on the couch because they can see the cards. So let's... They're giving me a look. How about Mark Brooks picks left or right hand to determine red or black? Ricky's got the two playing cards. He says left.
Black.
It's black, so that is me going first. Well, what do you say we do this Casablanca thing first?
It's our own.
So you don't have any idea who it is, huh?
I mean, if you say you haven't played it,
I have not, but artist. You have played
I have.
This artist.
See, that's what I'm trying to think
this
of.
Band was not on Casablanca. They did four records on a different label.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
And they
Jesus. Why do I should know that. I played their freaking record. It was, all right,
what me. If I tell you if it's an all-girl band?
Girl School.
Nope. All-girl band from 1974.
Oh, Fanny.
Fanny it is. Correct, sir. Fanny is here.
Oh, that, yeah. Yes. Fuck, yeah. They signed a custom. That's right. Girl's School.
So their fourth and final album. Check that out.
Wow.
The album's called Rock and Roll Survivors.
When'd you get that?
I found that the other day at Revolver Records. That's a cool little record store in downtown Phoenix that I hadn't been to in months and stumbled across that and a couple other nice little gems I'll be bringing in.
Look how cool Patty Quatro is.
Oh, this is a really strong record. I dig this record a lot. So we'll get to a little bit of history here and kind of a funny story towards the end, of course. This is, like I said, an all-girl band. They got together in L.A. under the name of Wild Honey. This is all stuff that I think, A.D., you may have covered.
Mm-hmm.
That was a long time ago you played Fanny. You played Charity Ball, if I'm not mistaken.
I sure did.
Great song. But they were getting frustrated trying to break through this male-dominated industry here, and they're getting pretty fed up. And they were just about to throw in the towel after a gig at an open mic night at the Troubadour on Sunset Strip. And in the audience was the producer Richard Perry, who was specifically looking for an all-female band. Talk about serendipity.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, well, maybe I'll hop down to the Troubadour and check out who's at the open mic night.
There'll perchance be an all-girl rock band down there.
Right. Richard Perry is a producer that worked with Harry Nilsson and Ringo Starr and stuff, but he hadn't done any of that yet. This is like 1969. But he was blown away by Wild Honey, and these chicks can rock, man. These girls play really well. They've done sessions and stuff like that. They're really
talented.
Well,
they're skilled musicians. They're good singers and they're good players. They're you know, they're playing their own instruments, and that was groundbreaking back in the day.
Right.
Who did that?
Yeah, not too many.
Who the fuck did
Nobody,
that?
Really.
No, right. I mean, these girls were real. These women were real pioneers at rock and roll for that women can fucking. I mean, there would be no Joan Jett.
Right. No Runaways, no Joan
Runaways,
Jett.
No Runaways, no none of that.
No Girls' School, the aforementioned.
Certainly.
Usually you had your girls out front singing, you know.
Or background chicks, singers, backup vocals.
Right, but you didn't see a girl behind the drum kit usually outside of Karen Carpenter maybe, but, you know, that's about it.
Yeah,
right?
Some chick shredding a solo.
Yeah. So Richard Perry, the producer who spots them, he convinces Reprise to sign the band, and they went Wild Honey, not so good. Let's change the name to Fanny. And I guess the reason for that is because they really wanted to have a name that said, this is an all-girl band. I think Fanny, you know,
kind of hot.
Kind of
totally
kind of says.
Yeah, I fucking think that.
And so they did three.
And you know what? They're good-looking women.
Yeah, they are.
They're beautiful. All of
that
them
doesn't
are
hurt.
Hot, man.
That doesn't, and we're not being like misogynist here.
No,
over that,
no,
because,
they're pretty girls.
Because wouldn't we say like this is a cool looking band of dudes as well? Like, I mean, is
Punky
it
Punky Meadows? We've called him pretty so cocksucking many times, right?
Nice.
That
nice.
Fucking Punky Meadows. Is,
nice word there.
Whatever.
Nice adverb.
You know,
cocksucking
times.
But
you know,
but I mean,
pretty.
If the guys are dorks on the cover. We're not going to buy it either.
And
so if
it's
cool looking dude, it's like, well, these guys look like they're pretty cool.
Right. And the first thing we brought up is that they're good players.
Right.
So.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
The defense rests.
Except, so they did three records, and Richard Perry is behind the boards producing them. And he had the charity ball and stuff. That's all him producing it. And they landed that song in the top 40. And then on their fourth album, they had Todd Rundgren producing, which I'm really curious to hear it. It's called Mother's Pride. Have you ever heard that record?
I have not heard that record. Now, that's still when the two Millington sisters were in the band.
Yes.
That's June and Jane Millington.
That's right.
Right.
Well, look at the memory on you. Not bad. Not
Dude,
bad.
They were so hot. We're back to that again.
Yes. So, yeah. And then after that, the founding member June left.
Right.
Along with their drummer, Alice DeBuhr.
Right.
B-U-H-R. They were replaced with Bree Brandt on drums. And I got some stories about her. She's got a cool, interesting.
That's actually Barry Brandt, really.
In
it's
drag?
The same guy, yeah.
Oh, unbelievable.
I mean, it's the same chick I'm in.
And from Detroit, we've got the Detroit's rock and roll family dynasty.
Yeah.
Patty Quatro.
The Kennedys of Detroit rock.
Yeah. And Patty Quatro writes and sings the track we're going to hear, which is Long Distance Lover, side one, track three.
And that's Susie Quatro's older sister.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Patty plays the guitar and rips.
She's badass, dude.
And Susie played the bass, remember?
Yep.
And this lineup would record this, their final album. This is it. And Patty would retire after this record. So it was the album was a one and done. But it did contain their highest charting hit, which was called Butter Boy. Butter Boy,
yeah.
Which I believe was one of your films.
Actually, yeah, it was I did like eight or nine of those.
Well, I think it started as a follow-up to Butterball, which is a holiday classic.
Well, mine was spelled not B-U-T-T-R, boy. It was B-U-T-T, or...
Butter. Oh my God.
No. Shut up. Okay.
Thank you. How? Yes, how? Oh my God.
It's gotten, I think we've lowered the bar.
So the drummer Bree, who is not Barry Brandt on drums, she would go on to do a bunch of session work performing on records as great as ELO's A New World Record and as bad as Peter Criss's Let Me Rock You.
So she's run the gamut.
Yeah, she has run. Yeah, that is from A to Z there.
And her work with Angel was pretty good.
Now, in the 1980s, Bree formed a songwriting trio with Glenn Ballard and Davey Farringer. And they wrote an estimated 60 or 70 songs for MCA Records. One of the songs they wrote was called Nightline, which was pulled from an album at the last minute when the two record labels could not come to an agreement over the split on the publishing rights.
Oh, for God's sake.
You know, it happens, right? You know, so they wrote all these songs, and it was going to be placed on a record, but it just didn't pan out. What was the record? Thriller by Michael Jackson.
Oh, for the love of God. Are you serious?
I am serious. That probably sold 60, 70 million.
Over a couple of percentage points.
Yeah, exactly.
For a couple of points.
That's it. Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, she's kind of just sloughed it off like, well, what are you going to do? You know.
Well, it's the music biz. There's that. Right. You know yeah. what? And let me tell you, I get a little crass sometimes. We all throw our hands in the air and just go, ah, and we get so cynical, you and I, on this show.
Yes.
Because how many times have not only we told that story, but friends of ours, friends you know, whoever's listening out there, how many times has that happened? How many more, you know, and you just go, ah. So you turn into a wise ass and you get all cynical and go, fuck it. And that's what she did, huh? She just went, ah.
No, she's making cakes now. She has one of those cake boss kind of things. She was on that.
What?
Yeah, her last name is like Darling now or something. So Brie Darling.
Aww.
She go, yeah. And her daughter was a Playboy playmate.
Oh, really?
I didn't write down the daughter's first name, but I'm not sure what it is, but there you go.
Hmm.
Yeah, interesting.
Oh, yeah. Let's take a break. Take a short break.
I've got some internet sleuthing to do.
Yes.
So let's go ahead and pop this on. This is Long Distance Lover from the album called Rock and Roll Survivors on Casablanca.
Woo!
Oh, yeah. So that's the
Fanny,
great Fanny.
Legendary band.
I love that song. That chorus is so hooky, right, man. It just...
They were cool, man. I really dug them. They're cool, and that's a great pop tune, man.
Yeah, and it's got some rockers on it too, but that one stuck out to me as the great pop song that I was in the mood for today.
The model for things to come, literally, you know, as far as rock and roll.
I should mention that for Kiss fans, you know, the Casablanca stuff runs deep and the connections. That the album is produced by Vinnie Poncia.
Okay, right.
Yeah, there you go.
Yep.
And of course,
known in the corridors of Casablanca.
That's right. And it comes out in 1974. So anyway, AD, what you got, man?
All right, man. I've got something that I got. I like bringing new bands in, but I'm bringing in a band that really was so influential. Brand new to the show. Brand new to a lot of people. I don't think a lot of people are going to know this band by name, but there's going to be a few that go, fuck yeah. this has a local connection to me.
Okay.
Because it features a drummer and the guy who co-wrote the song, a guy named Joe Hasselvander.
And Joe Hasselvander.
Pentagram.
Wow. Where did you get that record?
Dude, I found this at Zia. It's their double record, came out in 1994 on Peaceville Records. It's a double album, and it's called Be Forewarned. Now, if you flip it back over, and it's a gatefold, there's boobies on the cover, which is fantastic.
There is a boob.
Yep, there's a boob or two.
Oh, yep, hello there. My goodness.
A naked devil guy, sort of, biting the neck of a naked, not yet to be, but soon to be, devil chick. Right? If all the plots go the same way. But no, dude, this is... Now, here's the cool... This was actually co-written by Victor Griffin and Joe Hasselvander. I'm going to play a song called Live Free and Burn. Now, you know Joe Hasselvander. I'm pointing to my friend Mark Damian Brooks and Liz. Yes. You know Joe Hasselvander. You know Joe Hasselvander. Ryan, just from the stories I've told. Joe Hasselvander, a personal friend of mine. And an amazing drummer and a storied legend in the Washington, D.C. area. Joe Hasselvander played with local, cover band, sort of slash original band, Monarch Rivals for a while. Oh. A little band called The Boys, spelled with a Z, which then we'd write on the dressing room wall, The Boys O's. We'd add an O, you know, The Boys. And then we'd write O-S at the end of it.
Like Bozos?
So no matter where they wrote their logo, we'd put an O-S at the end. They were the Boyzos. And it just pissed everybody off, including our agent, which we had the same booking agent. So, but Joe and I are great friends. You know him from the Raven story, where he took over the drum part in Raven.
That's right.
That three-piece power screaming metal band. And
yes.
But also Joe is known... Seriously, not even locally, but sublocally in the D.C. area for a tape that he put out called The Herpy Boils.
I've heard the stories of this. This is great.
There was a guy in a wheelchair with no legs who was the drummer. And that was Weenus.
Take that, Rick Allen.
His name was Weenus Fester, or so they called him. Oh. They had a guitar player named Bleedo. And... Joe actually played bass. Actually, it was fuzz bass and filth. So he was the bass player and singer, and known as Val Vomitorium. So he put out a Herpy Boils tape, which I don't know if you've heard yet.
I have not heard it. You have spoke about it, but you've never played it for me.
I've actually got it on CD because
you've got the remastered.
Well, this happened in the late 80s, and you know that tape's probably disintegrated by now in the Arizona heat.
Was this a tape that was actually manufactured, or was this literally like a Kmart cassette?
Pass it around, make sure your friends duplicate it tape.
Wow.
Which goes really back to the story of Pentagram. A legendary band. Now, you could call them doom metal. They came about, the whole thing started, the impetus, if you will, which is a dark metal song title right there, The Impetus.
Yes.
It started in 1971 in Alexandria, Woodbridge, Virginia area.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these cats are all local Virginia guys. They, you know, Woodbridge, Dumfries, south of the D.C. Beltway, right? Springfield area, mm-hmm. you know. And so the impetus started in 1971. Their first record didn't come till 1985.
Ooh, that took a while.
But here's the deal. They were, you know, they were in the folds of Sir Lord Baltimore and Black Sabbath. You know, mm-hmm. Not many people really doing that hard doom metal. But they were. Somehow they caught on to it, and it was their thing. So it was started way back in 71, but it took all these years. So instead of selling albums, like, what kept the band together, right?
Yeah.
Nothing, really. They split up 100 times. There were so many versions of this band. So this guy, Bobby Liebling, had this concept, and he got all these different people together. They couldn't get a deal. So they had, like, audience with Murray Klugman and Sandy Pearlman.
Okay, Blue Oyster Cult people.
Right, and mm-hmm. and they were like, wow, you guys are hip. It's really cool what you're doing. But they went up there, and you know, I guess this Bobby Liebling guy, who was the head guy, main songwriter, got in an argument about the production with Murray Krugman, and so that went south, you know. And then they had audience with Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons, and they were like, well, you don't really have an image. So
you don't really have an image.
Yeah, right. You got to look like us and blow shit up.
It'll get better.
Right. So, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, they just couldn't put two and two together. You know, nothing was happening. I mean, Columbia had offered them a little piece of something and just they never.
Of a deal or a candy or.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We'll name a candy bar after you. But I mean, what happened was then that they got this weird underground following. Then they went through band member after band member. Still, now this is 1971, 1972, 1973. You know, now yeah. We're into 1976 or so. but the thing is, those tapes that they made or never really finished with Columbia and Krugman, and they recorded all their rehearsal tapes. Now, when they did these auditions with, you know, for Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons, they did it at their rehearsal place. And they were rolling tape the whole time. So now all of a sudden they're putting out tapes. They don't have a record deal. Bands are selling records everywhere. These guys are passing around tapes. But these tapes are getting, like, really popular. So
okay.
That's kind of the thing. So boom, boom, boom. I mean, now this was only in 76. Now remember, their first fucking record came out in 85. So we could I could do this for another 2 hours about, and then they put out another tape where they, yeah. So
can I stop you for a second and ask, when really did tapes come out? Like in the mid 70s?
When cassettes got popular?
The cassettes, like
early
70s. Like you go to Kmart and buy the 60 minute, 30 minute cassette.
Early 70s, 71, 72.
Yeah. Was it that far back?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought that was more of an 80s thing or late 70s thing, but
No.
Okay. I'm not that old. I'm just a kid. I'm a babe in the woods.
Whatever. So they go through these changes, and this Bobby Liebling, finally he meets this guy, Joe Hasselvander. He goes and sees a band called Sex at Louis Rock City.
Okay.
At Bailey's Crossroads? Virginia, which is Falls Church, Virginia. And it's members of the boys, right?
Okay.
And a couple other of his bands. Remember Marty Sweeney on bass? Yeah. Well, Marty Sweeney was the bass player. And Paul Throwbridge was, you know, so.
If you say so.
So anyway, this band Sex are members of, you know, these different local bands. So Liebling now, all these years later. And they met in 1978 on Halloween night at Louis Rock City. So all these years later, he puts this band together. He joins them, but he still owns the name Pentagram because people are still leaving. He just goes, at least I'm going to own the name. Cool name.
Yeah.
So they go through, again, more splinters. So there's another band called Death Row. Now, you remember Death Row? Another sub-cult band that passed out tapes, except they're from Knoxville. Well, these bands meet. They merge. Liebling and Hasselvander then put out. Actually, they were called Death Row, but they put out Pentagram's first record as Pentagram.
Okay.
Right? Nothing. So they released more tape.
No response from the record?
No.
They finally put out... What's the name of the record? Is it just called self-titled?
Self-titled, yeah. And I think there's an alternate title, like you could call it like the Black Album or whatever. Alternate title, I believe, is called Restless.
Okay. And so that came out in the...
85.
That's 85.
All these years later after passing out tapes. Well, these are our demos that we did for,
Yeah, yeah.
And this is that rehearsal that we did with... but they created this huge following. So here, this record came out. Like I said, this came out in 94.
This record. Now, what is this culled from? What is this? Is this all new recordings in the 90s? Or?
No. This was a new record. This was their second album. So once...
9 years later?
Yeah.
Well, that's taking their time writing.
Yeah, well, they put out the first. And then there was another, then they put out another album, 2 years after that.
Okay.
And then a year after that, and then 7 years later was another record. They keep breaking up. The singer got arrested with his girlfriend, and that fucked something up, And
well, there's a documentary about Pentagram. Have you seen this documentary?
Well, they're kind of like Anvil. That's what I'm saying. They're so legendary to an underground. So if anybody who knows Pentagram is listening, they're going to go, fuck yeah, dude, right? But anybody else is going to go, that's so Spinal Tap crazy.
It is.
But there's a huge following. People really dig Pentagram. And you know what, dude? They're fucking heavy. They're like Sabbath heavy. Mm-hmm. They're old school. They're not trying to be new and tricky and flashy or shreddy. They're just doom rock. Dude, they have a song called, Nightmare Gown, where I saw you rob that grave and the body was turned over. And I'm like, I almost played that one. They have another song called Wolf's Blood. That was on the queue. It's a double album, dude. There's so many great metal songs about all kinds of cool shit. But I chose... These guys are great.
You're doing side one, track one, looks like.
I am. And here's the deal. Sometimes I got to go side one, track one. It's what you do if I was the band, that's the one you'd put first. And Pentagram's a cult band. The people who know them would go, no, dude, play Wolf's Blood or play fucking Nightmare Gown. This is the first song that the general public, that the band intended them to hear. So I think this would be better. There. Yeah, album one, side one, track one. It's called Live Free and Burn. And it's really cool. It goes into this really badass 6-4 thing at first because Hasselvander, he's fucking drummer. He's behind that shit. And then they go into this cool 4-4. So it ends up into the – dude, it's so Sabbathy. It's so heavy. You'll fucking love it.
All right, are you ready for it?
Yes, let's drop this from 1994 Peaceville Records Pentagram's Be Forewarned album, Live Free and Burn.
Walking the street.
Is that metal or what?
That is very metal. Yeah.
That's Pentagram from the Before Warned record. That's Live Free and Burn. And just on a side note, like when we did the intro and, you know, we always kind of give a little bit of a nod about what we're going to do on our mystery boxes. I said that I had worked with two of the artists. Well, this is one of the artists. Now, Joe's a drummer. I'm a drummer. We're from the same area. We tooled around the same area. Once I quit this one band, an old band of mine, Monarch, which we've spoken a lot of.
Played them on the show.
Yep. I had started playing in a band called Dirty Looks at the time, and I was home.
Played them on the show.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, yeah.
I see a pattern here.
Anyway, it was weird to go see my old band, the only band I had ever been in my whole life, and I went and saw them at the Bayou, which we've mentioned on the show a billion times, and Joe Hasselvander was the drummer. I was watching my brother Jeff play guitar with Joe Hasselvander, and they were, you know what, dude? They're really fucking good. They're really cool. You know, I was like, God damn, these guys are good. I want to be in their band again. And then also, you know, where I worked directly with Joe is after all the Dirty Looks thing, I was in a band called Centerfold, and I was playing drums and singing part of the leads from In Back of the Kit. And the record label that we were working with at the time that were developing us, CMC International, they wanted me to be the lead singer. And so did the guy who was singing the other half of the songs. He's like, now you go sing all of it. I don't want to sing. Okay. So our drummer was Joe Hasselvander.
Wow, you guys have a long storied career.
Dude, we went on the road. I could tell you stories, but let's just say, Joe, I love you, and fuck Pentagram rules. I'm holding up two big horns.
There you go.
Love you guys. Pentagram.
Yeah, good. That's a good – I'm borrowing that from you.
Yeah.
Wow. Hal sounds like an unruly crowd over there. Like, I guess that's the metal crowd. All right, so I've got something from Birmingham.
Ah.
But it's not heavy like Pentagram. This is from 1976, and it's a band called City Boy.
Dude.
What?
I kid you not.
Look at your face.
Of all the time, you know, we always talk about, we've never brought in the same, not even the same band in our mystery box.
No. Did you bring one?
No.
Oh.
I'm going to tell you what. Of my three picks, I had four on the shelf. Four on the right.
Yeah.
And I put a City Boy album back. That would have been one of.
Really?
Kid
wow.
You not.
Of all.
If you
weird,
say so.
Kid,
different album. Different album. But yeah. City Boy would have been, of all fucking bands,
really?
Would have been
wow.
the first.
That would have been crazy,
it
yeah.
It would have been weird.
It's known as the Destroyer because it has happened once, but the circumstances led to it happening. It's
the Dick Wagner.
The Dick Wagner yeah. episode where we both brought Kiss's right. Destroyer and to play.
We
kind of
knew
Sweet
that
Pain.
Was going
to
happen. Yeah.
Right. So if it ever happens, you'll hear the Destroyer Rock and Roll Demons sound effect, and then I don't know what we'll do. It's never happened. But yeah, I brought their first album. This is their debut record that came out on Renaissance Records in 1976. We're going to hear a song called The Greatest Story Ever Told. Great song.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. And this is one of the first albums ever produced by Robert John Mutt Lang,
mm-hmm.
who did all of their records, I believe. I think he did all
he
of them.
He did the one I was going to play.
Can which I ask you which album you brought or which album you were going to bring?
I can't remember the name of it.
Is it the World on Fire one or
no,
is it the earlier?
The one after this.
Oh, okay. Their guitarist, Mike Slammer, on this album would go on to form projects with the members of Kansas. He formed Streets with the singer Steve Walsh and a band called Seventh Key with the bassist Billy Greer. But certainly the height of his career post City Boy would be as a ringer on Warrant's two albums, Dirty Rotten, Filthy Stinkin' Rich, and Cherry Pie.
Ooh.
He did all the solos on those records.
So you mean Joey never played a note?
Is Joey the name of one of the guitar players on Warrant?
I just think boy band when I hear that.
Joey. I think it is. I think Joe might be the name of. Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
See,
so
there you go.
So City Boy starts with three pals. Okay. You've got Steve, Lowell, and Max. And they go way back to prep school. Afterwards, after prep school, they lost touch with Max. In 1969, Max had a complete nervous breakdown and wound up in the psych ward. His old pal Stephen Lowell would pick him up after the hospital, and they would play guitar together to sort of lift his spirits and stuff.
Yeah, sure.
Which was kind of a nice move there.
I like these guys.
And they had another dude with them at the time, so they met this dude Chris that also played guitar. So it was like these four acoustic guitar player dudes that were hanging out. And the four of them, so they formed this four-piece acoustic outfit called Back in the Band, was the name of the band, Back in the Band. And they started playing gigs. Well, they got the attention from a record label, and they wanted to sign them on the condition that they add drums and electric guitar, like an electric guitar.
And get rid of the crazy guy.
And yeah, and the guy over there cutting himself in the corner and drooling, please get rid of him.
We're going to need to make a couple of minor changes.
Yes. that guy with the aluminum foil on hat on, he's out.
And he's peeing.
So they added those two guys in the band, the drummer and the guitarist, and they went into the studio with a young Puppy Lang and did this album. He wasn't fully a mutt yet.
Okay, right.
So Mutt would do all their albums, as I said. But now here's where we may differ. I can't recommend moving much further into the City Boy catalog. I think their albums get a little too
cheesy, too predictably that era.
Yeah, there's a certain sound that they hit upon with the keyboards that they're doing and the arrangements that they're doing that sounds incredibly dated to me.
I think it's the way he started singing after that. It was sort of that nasally have to go kind of high pitched thing when you're singing it.
That was a great song you just had going there.
Yeah, you.
It's a high pitched thing
when you sing, and you gotta go.
Put a bass line to that, Ricky.
It got really pretty. Yeah, it did. It got. I think that's why I ended up putting it away. I was looking for different things to play, and I have two of their albums.
Which ones? You got the girl, the one with the car with the and
the
girl.
Yeah, the photo. I think that's their second record. I can't fucking remember the name.
There's
of
one where they're
it's
eating
not like
at
I'm a City Boy fan. I just pulled it out. I'll sometimes randomly pull one or two out, and that was one I go, I'll spin that one.
And there's another one where they're all sitting at a table eating dinner.
I have that one too.
That's the other one. Okay.
Yeah.
And then there's the one.
I don't know the names of either of them.
Big fan, huh?
Well, no, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. This is a good record, and I need to get this one.
This is, I mean, I've kind of listened. Kind of spots of the other records. I've seen videos, especially doing research today. Man, the one that's heralded as being one of their best album, if not the best, is the one that's like The World's on Fire or something like that.
I don't have that one.
I listened to a little bit of that and I turned it off. I was like, this is terrible. I mean, somebody just go ahead and dump that down the toilet. Yes, that's right. That's right, me.
But this was in a pivotal era in rock, too, where things were getting weird. Like, this is... Mott had broken up.
Here we go again.
Disco was taking over, right? Wasn't disco taking over?
Yes. Are you reading? You know, have you had that tattooed on your arm and just reading from it?
No,
now?
But these
Mott had broken up.
Those are those moments. That's like Kennedy had been shot. You know, these moments where they're pivotal and you go, all right, listen.
Watergate happened.
Yeah, Aladdin became the Thin White Duke. Right?
Yeah.
And these musical pivotal eras.
Era. This is a terrible record. So, it's the keyboards. It sounds completely dated. So,
right.
Mutt Lang, you know, that's his fault. They should have reined it in. This album, this is their debut record, and this veers all over the place. There's funky stuff. Like, it's 76, you know. Mott had broken up.
That's a pivotal era.
What the hell's going on there?
No, the disco thing was happening.
I'm telling you.
And there's elements of that in
there. Right. Of course there is. What do you do? What do you do back then?
Yeah, so they're kind of, they got one toe in this kind of sandbox one toe in that one. And then there's great moments. And then there's a couple of like little clunkers. But there's always like this nice sense of humor that they have in the lyrics and stuff. So... overall, I find this a pretty good record, you know, 7 out of 10, I think. It's definitely worth picking up. It's the first one. Now, I can't recommend going any further. I don't know about you, but you might know those records a little more than me.
I, like I said, I put it back on the shelf. I decided not to play it. you know?
Oh, okay.
I just like,
boy, that would have been a weird time to both pull out the same band.
Well, it's because of the City rest Boy. Of my... I'm going to pull another one out. I'll pull a City Boy tune out one of these days.
Yeah.
It's going to be a while now that you brought this. Yeah. But it's also going to be wrapped in a fucking heavy metal barrage of artillery. Like, I'll bring Sir Lord Baltimore and...
More Pentagram.
Yeah, you know, more Pentagram or Captain Beyond. And I'll put them in the middle, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Know. So this is on side two. Let's go ahead and pop it on. It's the greatest story ever told. It's pretty funny. It's like this guy wants to be a rock star. He goes to a, a fortune teller, a gypsy queen kind of thing that rubs a snake on him or something like that. And he's like, by this time tomorrow, you're going to be the greatest story ever told. So he's going to be famous and everything from it.
Shook the chicken bones
and put the... The hoodoo, yeah. What's the magic powder called? Is that the hoodoo?
The gree-gree.
The gree-gree, yeah. Gree-gree gumbo.
Yeah, you put this in your pocket, love. You put this in your pocket.
So that's what happens to him. And Ricky, it's got a four minor in it.
Ooh, I love me a four minor.
We are big fans of four minors. The four chord in any scale should be the a major chord, but in this case it's a four, played as a minor.
So which is sad.
It's the saddest of all changes.
And it was always on Michael Jackson's birthday wish list.
Correct.
Just drop that
right
needle.
Right as usual, sir.
Just drop the needle, lady.
All right, here we go. What?
In his dreams, they kissed him clean. He heard them sighing. Listen.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, that's City Boy from their debut record in 1976 with You'll Be the Greatest ELO Record You've Never Bought.
You've never been. Yeah, dude, that's a great, great song.
That is a good song, isn't it?
It really is.
Beautiful chord changes, and these guys have great harmony vocals and stuff. That's, I mean, they started singing and playing acoustic guitars. That's how they formed. So
yeah, Mark and I were talking, like, while it was playing, that how much it reminded us of Crack the Sky.
It's got a little Crack the Sky in it.
Baltimore, Pittsburgh kind of connection there.
But as you travel through this record, you hear some of the R&B disco thing creeps in, and
you know,
they rock. They got some rockers on here. The song,
you know,
before
what?
This.
You know what? They're guilty of wanting to keep their record deal. And so the labels went, hey, you know, wear these pants.
Yeah.
Play these notes.
Wear these pants.
Can't sing about that anymore.
And the record label said, listen.
Yeah, you, hey, Blondie, get your hair cut. Or you, hey, other dude, shave. You know,
I don't want to shave. Listen, Mott broke up.
Two words, Punky
Disco
Meadows.
Smooch.
Two words, Punky Meadows.
All right, AD, what do you have, sir?
Well, I brought my first selection was an old buddy of mine.
Okay, yeah,
and
you got another
buddy?
I'd
worked with. No, but I brought local legends from my humble upbringings on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought I would bring a local legend from my humble, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing anymore, on the southwest region of the country. I
all
brought
right.
some Jerry Riopel.
What? Ooh. Okay, yeah, nice. As an Arizona native, yes.
Now,
okay,
Jerry Riopel, if you're not in Arizona or, I don't know, Puerto Penasco, Mexico, you haven't really heard of him. And he's actually one of these success stories. Honestly, a true success story in the music business without being a rock star.
Mm-hmm.
He's living up in the mountains right now, you know, northern Scottsdale.
Has he got a compound up there?
God knows. You know, spas and, you know, monks and stuff like that running around. Yeah. And he's this guy that started out. He was born in Detroit and raised in Tampa, Florida. His sound is kind of very stamped with the Southwest. It's got kind of a bougie woogie in it with a Western accent, a little feet with a hint of beach funk. Maybe that's what he picked up in, you know, Tampa when he was growing up, and a hint, a dash of, and I say this reluctantly, a dash of Jimmy Buffett.
Uh oh!
No, I know. Now I am not a Buffett fan.
Oh,
at all.
Early Buffett's
right?
good.
At all.
I like the early stuff.
Okay.
Right. Okay. So
Ricky
chiming in, saying yes to the
Buffett.
I think it's a taste of.
Sean,
I think
it, agreeing.
I think it's the good time, quote unquote, the good time simplicity, kick back with a margarita, let the sunset vibe. In Jerry Riopel's music that works for me. And it's not overtly or overly Jimmy Buffett, but it's more Little Feet. It's more funky,
okay. Mm-hmm.
Beach funk, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And the guy's a legend. I mean, he started out when he moved to L.A. in the early 60s. He started writing songs, and immediately people liked what he was doing and somehow fell into, like, part-time hey, I'm a producer. And people were hiring him, and he was doing good shit.
So like, he just randomly said he was a producer?
Yeah, and kind of people went, okay.
That's awesome.
This was L.A. in the early
60s. Hey, I'm a brain surgeon.
Hey, all right. Okay. Yeah. Hey, I had a brain. Let's do this. So, but sooner or later, you know, sort of again, like Pentagram, word got out and go, this Riopel guy, he writes pretty good tunes, and he produces pretty good demos. Now, he's not making records for anybody, but, you know, can you produce our demo? I can do that.
Sure. <Yeah. laughs>
Sure. And so he did. So pretty soon he teamed up. He signed up with A&M. They're like, okay, we'll come to work with us, be our staff writer. And if they need a house producer, you can go engineer and produce and boom, boom, boom. So he had a couple little minor hits here and there. Went on to write and produce for, like, Brewer and Shipley.
Sounds familiar.
I
what
think
do they do?
Didn't they do one toke over the line,
is
sweet
that what
Jesus,
they
or something?
One toke.
Yeah, Leon Russell. Herb Alpert, who of course Herb Alpert was the A in A&M
Records. Of course, well there's your A, yeah.
But he did stuff with Kenny Rogers, Rita Coolidge, and tomorrow's favorite dinner, Meatloaf. Right?
The great Meatloaf.
So nowadays, so he kind of tooled about, never made any giant hits, never did anything spectacular anywhere in the business, but kept making a living. Right?
Good for him.
Just somehow went to work every day, and I did this demo, $100 here, a couple $100 there, wrote a minor hit for this song, you know, for this band, never really did giant shit, but Mailbox Money, boom, boom, boom.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah.
So then in the early 70s, meanwhile, he's playing. Oh, as a matter of fact, check this out. Remember the Hollywood Argyles?
No.
They were more famous for one song, Alley-Oop. Oop, oop.
Okay, that I've heard. Oop.
That was the Hollywood Argyles. Named after sort of a, almost like the Wrecking Crew. At Hollywood and Argyle.
Oh, okay. There was a bar that everybody partied at?
There's a place called Capitol Records.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't remember the cross
and
street.
He was doing stuff at Hollywood and Argyle. He was a member of the Hollywood Argyles doing session work as a drummer, right?
Okay.
And so he went through all this stuff. So he'd put a little band together here and play a club, and he'd do another little gig here. Meanwhile, he's writing songs. So he goes out. He knows this guy who owns a celebrity theater in Phoenix, Arizona.
That would be Doug Clark.
Doug Clark. So Doug Clark says, "Well, why don't you bring your band on New Year's Eve? And we'll put you at the Celebrity Theater." Now, Celebrity Theater is what, about 2,800 seats in the round, a tiny little round building with a dome. And inside, it's circular so that the stage is in the middle and it rotates.
Mm-hmm. Greatest place to see a venue or see a live band in Phoenix, I think.
Apparently so. For Jerry Riopelle played that first gig that was not supposedly he was no name, he was no big all-star, but people showed up in Phoenix because apparently it was promoted well. It was mayhem, and that started every year after that, until even well after I moved here, Jerry Riopelle played New Year's Eve at the Celebrity Theater.
Oh, really?
Phoenix, and that's what happened year after year after year. And just like the Beach Boys on July 4th in Washington, D.C., played on the Mall year after year after year. And bands like that, little things like that, right? Or the Nighthawks played every fucking New Year's Eve at the Bayou. And that's, what are you doing on New Year's? Going to see the Nighthawks at the Bayou.
Going to see Jerry
Riopelle at the Celebrity Theater. And this happened up until recently. So... He became a local legend. Well, now he's living in Phoenix or in Scottsdale up in the mountains. So my connection with Jerry Riopelle as an outsider who moved to Phoenix, like, what's this Riopelle thing about? And I'd hear his songs every once in a while going, oh, that's fucking good. But I got a call 2 years ago, and a local musician, a girl named Loria McDonald, who's very well embedded in the Arizona music scene, a solo acoustic artist and a songwriter, and she's worked with different bands, was diagnosed with cancer. And Jerry Riopelle has the ability to draw people, and he happens to be friends with Loria McDonald. So they said, why don't we do a big fundraiser for Loria McDonald? And we'll do it at the Rhythm Room in Phoenix. And maybe we could get Jerry Riopelle to play. And the phone call was made, and they got Jerry Riopelle to play. So Jerry then contacted my buddy and your buddy and Ricky's buddy and Sean's buddy and Liz's buddy and Mark's buddy, Chucky Baby.
Chucky Baby. He's got to be on the show at some point.
Chucky's known in this town. He's been a staple in the belly of this town since the early 80s. And Jerry said, I'll do it, but I don't have time to put a band together. And he doesn't because, you know, he's living up there and doing his thing. And so Chucky said, well, I'll put a band together.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you did that show.
I was on it. Sean was, too.
Yep. And you were on that show.
Oh, you guys were on the show?
Yeah.
And I was on that show. So we were able to play. So
You played with Jerry.
With then. Jerry Riopelle. Mm-hmm. How many songs? A full set,
like,
right?
It was like yeah. 7, 8
Yeah,
songs.
7 or 8
And it was one of the coolest. It was one of those things where awesome. You just go, well, fuck. This guy's a real legend.
So cool.
A real legend. And, you know, I'm from the East. I'd never heard of a Jerry Riopelle. Who the fuck's that? But then you start investigating him and checking him out, and you go, God damn, this dude is like a big freaking deal out here. And that was one of those gigs where going into, I don't know about you guys, but every once in a while, even it was a small place, but it was an important mm-hmm. cause, even it was casual, no pressure, because it was a fundraiser, room. Friends got together. But I was a little nervous. I'm going, wow, this Jerry Riopelle.
Dude, Dixie Dregs used to open for
us. Yeah, it got Dixie to the point on the New Year's Eve. So like people would come and go, I want to open up for Jerry Riopelle.
No, and it was the New Year's Eve that made him.
That's what made it. That was the thing with him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sean was saying the Dixie Dregs would open for Jerry. That's how big
that's
Jerry
what I'm
was.
Saying.
There.
Yeah. That's
well,
what I'm
I didn't
saying.
Know if everybody could hear him because he's off mic.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Cool.
So yeah, I mean, and so anyway, I think Jerry Riopelle's coolest songs. Now he writes some great shit. There's some great records and stuff like that. But I want to play. Where?
I got it.
I want to play. Let's Get Loaded.
All right.
Like we That's used to do.
No, what are you going to play?
But actually, it's called Loaded Like We Used to Do, but everybody knows it as Let's Get Loaded. Now, this we've jammed with this. You
all
know,
the time.
All of us. I think you've jammed it with us.
I probably
Chucky.
Have.
Yeah. Yep. Jerry Riopelle and Stuart Margolin wrote it. Jerry Riopelle and David Plenn were the producers on this. This is from the album In the Round. Now, this was actually recorded live at one of those famous New Year's Eve gigs.
Right. Now, this isn't the first one, but it's just a couple years into it, they're like,
yeah,
we should record this.
This was recorded on New Year's Eve 1977.
Okay.
And released in 1978.
Okay, gotcha.
So this was at the height of his celebrity then at the Celebrity Theater. This was like 6 years into it mm-hmm. where it really was like if you're near Phoenix, if you're in Vegas, you should drive down and see Riopelle at the fucking Celebrity Theater.
Wow,
so,
cool.
It's an amazing story, this guy, Jerry Riopelle. He's already in the Arizona Music Hall of Fame. And the fact we got to work with him and do this stuff. But you know what? This is not his most clever work. This is not his best writing. But this is a song about partying like a motherfucker. Let's Get Loaded like we used to do, Ryan. It's on, what is it, side 2, track 4.
You got it.
Drop that needle. Let's go to the Celebrity Theater.
Let's get loaded.
That was very cool, and thank you for the education on Jerry Riopel. I'm a transplant, too, and I've heard the name, but I really didn't know too much about him. So,
you know, it's weird. The first time I heard it, because once I got familiar with the music when I moved out to Phoenix in 92, and that's been a while now, I remember an old DJ in the Washington, D.C. area on WHFS, Surf Colwell, I think. Mm-hmm. I've mentioned him before here. He used to play this song. Not the live version, but the studio version. And that's the first time I heard it. And then I got familiar with Riopel. And one night we were at the jam, our Sunday jam, and Chucky goes, "Hey, you know, let's get..." I go, "Dude, I've heard that song."
Everybody's shocked.
Yeah,
what?
I was like, wow.
Get out of here, East Coast boy.
Yeah, go on with you.
You ain't heard that. Right? That's a bunch of horse pussy.
Go back to the Atlantic. So what you got, man? Oh, you know what? Special shout out to Steve Escalier for the mix on that. An old friend of mine.
Oh, nice. Okay, yeah. Mixed in the Celebrity Theater gig there.
By the way.
Right on. AD.
What?
In all of your travels and all of your stories, have you ever been the victim of a police raid at a party?
What a loaded question.
Yes.
That's a loaded question.
Really? I'm just going to say yes because yes.
I have too. Actually, in high school, I played some basement party. And got arrested for possession. I don't think I was drinking, so they gave me like a possession charge.
If you have to go back to high school for that, then.
And there was another time too where I got my band was in high school again. We were rehearsing in this place, and we shared a rehearsal space with another band that was older, and they drank a bunch of beers, and they didn't, you know, throw their beer bottles away. That's right, Hal. And a cop came up one time. I don't remember why the cop came up, but he knocked on.
Now what's that? I say, now what's that boy up to? Better check on it. Yeah.
Yeah, that was Officer Moon.
Yes.
Who was kind of one of the dickiest cops in Quincy at the time, and he just
kinda, yeah, actually Officer Moon.
Officer Moon. Yeah.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, he kind of kicked the door. May I come in? And of course. Yeah, and so he noticed this bunch of underage kids in there. I mean, we were like in eighth grade or something like that. And, or no, 11th grade.
Were you drinking?
I wasn't. No, we weren't drinking. We weren't big drinkers back then. That came like a year later.
Smells like weed in here.
But he sees all the beer bottles and stuff. And so, of course, he takes us all downtown. He handcuffs us. Gets his calls for backup or whatever, and so we all get hauled out of there with handcuffs. We're walking down the street, which is in downtown, and we get, you know, put your hand on the back of your head and shoved into a cop car and stuff. And so, again, we got off scot-free because none of us were drinking. We had to do breathalyzers down at the station and stuff like that, but we were handcuffed and thrown in the back of a car. And there's a pizza place across the street, which apparently this girl that my mom works with was sitting by the table by the window.
Whole thing.
So I think I saw your son hauled away by the cops.
Yes.
Which, by the way, that's kind of a dickish move.
Thanks,
like
Gladys Kravitz, for that.
You nosy bitch. Why do you need to say that? So, of course, my mom comes home and she's like, "What the hell happened last night? You got arrested and you didn't even tell me?" I'm like, "I didn't get arrested. They took us down there. Because there's beer bottles up in the practice space." Oh, so a couple close calls.
Tell Gladys Kravitz. Get her shit straight.
So I have a song all about a police raid here.
Okay.
And it's by Graham Parker and The Rumor from the 1977 album Stick to Me.
Oh, good.
A great record. Actually, for Graham Parker, what you need to do is you need to get Squeezing Out Sparks. That's where you start from 1979.
That's a strong record.
And then you get this one. This is the next one you get, Stick to Me, from 77 out on Mercury Records.
Well, okay, now let's take Graham Parker as a sound. You know, you got Nick Lowe, you got Robert Gordon, Link Wray. We're slightly different, but they're all sort of related to each other.
Yeah.
And harken it back to how we, you know, said Wetton and Jolynn Turner and right?
Yeah.
So we're saying they're similar, and I kind of group bands like that together in a weird way.
Yeah.
Graham Parker with Nick Lowe,
Yeah, Nick Lowe actually produced this record too, by the way.
Ah, see, there you go.
All incestuous, yeah. Right? And it's
and
very
Robert
similar.
Gordon joins the whole thing, and they're in a band together, and it's really cool. Yeah, it's
yeah. This is called "Stick to Me."
Okay.
And this record kind of almost didn't happen. The recording of this album was a little bit disastrous. There was some kind of a glitch with the tape or something. And so this is what Graham Parker says. There's a quote from Graham about it. It's a little long, but I think you're going to appreciate some of the statements that he makes towards the end. And I love Graham Parker. I think he's, outside of Ian Hunter, I mean, he is a sort of an heir to Ian Hunter's throne when it comes to lyrics. He's got that same approach
sharp,
to lyrics.
Really, like, biting, kind of, yeah.
So this is Graham Parker. He says, quote, "For Stick to Me, we had an 80-piece string section playing, but the whole album had to be scrapped because the master tape was leaking oxide or something. The producer didn't seem to spot it. We saw this black stuff coming off the tapes, but he didn't notice it. When we came to mix it, it was unmixable. The hi-hat was leaking through all the tracks. It was a nightmare because we had a tour coming up. In those days, I had a manager, and managers are always saying, 'We have to play in Sweden now.' Like, that's the most important thing to do.
Yeah.
So we remade the record in a week with Nick Lowe. It's not what I wanted at all. It's a very intense, grungy-sounding record. But I kind of like it now for that reason. I think people are trying to get that sound now and have been since the late 80s when we finally got rid of that Phil Collins drum sound and got real again."
My new favorite
like
artist.
Yes. "If a band made a record like that now, it would be hated."
Good. You know what? Bam. He just went up just for that quote in my book.
Yep. So, you know who didn't like it?
Well, let's not wake up David Coverdale. Let him sleep. I'm sure Cher would love it because she likes
like
everything.
It.
Yeah.
Who do you suppose didn't?
Because it's called Graham, and you can snort that.
Who do you suppose didn't like?
I'm thinking maybe Robert Christgau.
Robert Christgau, really the dean of American rock critics, chimes in.
Rate it.
In one of the all-time great Christgau moments, he says, quote,
"Yes.
This is indeed a disappointment. The production is muddy, the female chorus an excrescence, and the heat in Harlem is vapid and overblown. But it's not as depressing as the faithful believe. Sure, I'll probably put on his earlier records, Howl and Wind or Heat Treatment, when I feel like hearing Parker. Unless I just have to hear one of these songs, most of which eventually implanted themselves in my subconscious just like the others. A minus."
See?
Does that sound like an A minus review on a record?
No, but
he's such
work up to that. Can't leave you nowhere
his,
to go.
His hook right there was they implanted themselves. And that says they're hooky.
Yeah, Graham Parker
so
excels at that.
He can say what he wants, but those hooks just like Velcro.
Right.
Like jumping choyas out here in Arizona.
Nice.
You know, stick to your socks, man.
Ow. That's the most crass drop. Yeah. And you have some crass ones in there, Hal. But, okay. So here's a little snippet of the lyrics here on a song called The Raid, which is all about a police raid. He says in the lyrics, "I was just rolling up on some real good black." I'm assuming he means black tar heroin.
Black tar heroin, yes.
"Knock on the door and the window cracked. The DS just come to bust the fun. Everybody scatter and run. I was jostling with the baby in the bathroom, hanging out the party with a Coke spoon. Somebody yelled, 'Hey, my head's on fire. I just can't take it no higher. Hey, dealers in the north and dealers in the south, joints in the noses and joints in the mouth.' But the friction in the kitchen only won it out on the night of the raid."
Oh.
He's so great. This is such a great pop song,
too. I have to get tears just rolled out of my eye. Oh, the party.
Yeah, this is so.
Oh, the party.
This closes the record. It's the last song on the record, and it's just a fucking party. One of my favorite Graham Parker songs off my second favorite Graham Parker record, Stick to Me. And if go ahead and take the record out, AD, and then reach in there and tell me what you find inside of that record.
Ooh.
It's not black tar heroin.
I was going to say, if it's some sort of drug, it's
So reach in the sleeve there.
Oh, it's a reach in.
What you got there?
I have a Graham Parker and Rumor Stick to Me sticker.
Yes, it's a bunch of stickers in there.
Oh, it's a wallet size. You can, they're perforated. I see.
So you can stick them on your skateboard.
It's cool
on
that
your...
the sticker's still in there that nobody put them all over their notebook.
Right.
When they were younger.
That's what I'd have done.
So you got the one with the stickers. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah, I'm putting one on my man tit right now.
Yes, on each, like Wendy O. Williams style.
Yeah, I'll do the Strat one on my right one and the singer guy on my left one.
That's what I was hoping for.
Yeah. The singer guy.
The singer guy. Graham Parker.
Yeah, that guy.
And you can find these records for cheap, man. Squeezing Out Sparks and Stick to Me. All these Mercury ones from the 70s, man. They're $4. Let's go ahead and drop the needle on it, man. And the raid. On the night of the raid.
Let me finish sticking this one right here.
Oh, that is horrifying. A horrifying.
Play the record, okay?
Yes.
Where were you when the raid came? Where were you when the rain came? Out of the window or on the floor? Yeah, on the night of the rain. I was just rolling up some real good black. Knock on the door and the window cracked. The DS just come to bust the fun. Everybody scatter and run. Well, I was laughing with a baby in the bathroom. Hanging out with Poppy while the cook spooned. Somebody yelled, hey, my head's on fire. Just can't take it no higher.
Like that.
That's a great tune, man. That's a party right there.
Yeah.
Go buy those Graham Parker records immediately.
The early ones.
You want the 70s. If it starts with an 80, 81, 82, those years, you don't want them. You want 1979.
Yeah.
Then you go to 77. And then the two that Chris Cow really likes, you can have those two, Howlin' Wind and Heat Treatment. Those are decent. But Stick to Me, this one, great. Love it. Squeezing Out Sparks, first one you buy. You got to buy Squeezing Out Sparks.
That's a start there record for sure.
Yeah, I've been digging Graham Parker this week, man, just checking out all four of those records.
Well, right on.
Yeah, he's so great, man. They get better the more you hear him, man.
Well, again, I mean, you know, you could talk about Graham Parker and Elvis Costello and all the, you know, things. That's so similar, and, you know, Joe Jackson and stuff. And some of that, yes, became so mundane after a while. But if you do go early, like Elvis Costello with the Attractions, you know, the Angels Want to Wear Elvis's Red Shoes, and the earlier stuff before it got to 80s and programmed. Remember, again, what year was that, Ryan?
Which year? This album is 77.
Again, a pivotal, I think.
Mod had broken up.
Right?
Disco was
I'm telling you.
Graham kind of beats those guys out because Graham's first record's 75.
Yeah, well, I'm not worried about that. Because my record
what
came
you
out
got?
71.
71. Here we go. The golden years.
I'm just going to hand you this and let you figure this shit out, because that's what I did when I first. I picked it randomly out of my my collection there.
And then you put it on and said.
This is from the Mott Tower, and I grabbed that and I went, what is this?
Okay, well, it's A Good Harvest is the name of it, and it's the Harvest record label.
EMI subsidiary, right? That opened up in, what, 69, I think?
And apparently it is a compilation album of a lot of the bands on Harvest Records, including Kevin Ayers, Babe Ruth, Barclay James Harvest, Sid Barrett, cool, Edgar Broughton Band, never heard of him, Pete Brown, Climax Chicago, not
that the impetus of the Climax Blues Band, by the way.
Okay.
And an amazing track.
East of Eden, never heard of him. Sweet Smoke, Spontaneous Combustion, I got nothing.
Great song.
Electric Light Orchestra, yay, and Wizard, oh yeah. I've only heard of four of these.
Who am I going to play?
You're going to play Babe Ruth.
Nope.
You're going to play Barclay James Harvest.
Nope.
Thank God. Wizard.
Mm-mm.
ELO?
Nope.
Sweet Smoke?
Nope.
Spontaneous Combustion?
Nope.
Missed Combustion twice trying to say it. East of Eden?
Nope.
Chicago?
Climax Chicago?
Nope.
Kevin Ayers?
Nope.
Sid Barrett?
Yep.
Hey, ding, ding, ding.
That was the last one. That was all.
Do you not have a... He just goes, hey-o.
Hey-o.
Good job, Ricky.
This is a little compilation album that came out.
All right.
So...
Sid Barrett's crazy ass that died with his mom at his mom's house.
Okay, Sean. Okay, Sean, you're not on a mic, buddy.
So, this is Sid Barrett's second solo album, post... Pink Floyd. Now, I think Sid Barrett, like Sid Vicious, is known for being a huge part of a huge change in their particular genre of music. Yet, none of them really participated for very long in any of those said bands. Sid Barrett, I mean, eternally known as the guy, you know, inspired the Wall, and he's such an embedded part of Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
Dude, he did four singles and one record with them in early, like, 66, 67.
Didn't he do half of the second record before it all fell apart?
That's questionable as to he did it. Did he write it? People are going, not really. Did he play? Well... He was there. He was hanging out.
Physically there.
Yeah. And so that second album thing is still debatable. So okay. Let's say yes.
Okay.
Just let's say he did the whole goddamn thing and it was all his own. Right?
Okay.
Come on.
Yes, sir.
What were they doing back then? So Sid, you know, he got to the point, there were so many stories about, like, Sid Vicious and all that. And it was so...
Sid Vicious?
Yes, I'm talking about Sid Vicious and how he was known as the poster boy of the punk era and the Sex Pistols, and how he stamped he wasn't a founding member. You know, he didn't play on any of their records. And it was almost like Sid Barrett, although he was a founding member, sort of, you know, and really didn't participate a lot. I think their stories are similar and equally as tragic, where one died young. The other died.
Mentally died.
Young. Yeah. Right? Lived to, what, 2006? But was, I mean, the last thing he was doing was, like, he moved back. He was born in Cambridge, right? And after all the breakdown and all the shit, he ended up moving back to Cambridge with his mom's house, like Sean was saying. But he ended up just, like, gardening. You know, and when people would recognize him, he didn't want to talk about the old days. He went, you know, like, that's not me. He went back to his original name, you know.
Harvey McManfredsonson.
Yeah, right. But, I mean, that was like, I'm not that guy anymore. I'm not that guy.
Of course not, yeah.
Yeah.
He hadn't been for 45 years or whatever.
Right,
you know?
Exactly. So, I mean, real name is, now this gets weird. Check this out. This gets very... Rogery.
Rogery?
His real name is Roger Keith Barrett. Okay? The name Sid comes from lower class kids. Now, he was born in, you know, raised in Cambridge in England. Shell, town, fun, son.
Extraordinary.
Middle Earth. Around the 18th quadrant of the myopic years. The Lord of Centaur. Yeah, right. Okay. Anyway, so he is a middle class family kid. You know, his dad was kind of a successful businessman. Mm-hmm. Mom stayed at home, raised him. He was one of five kids, and you know, he got his first ukulele. He's 10 years old. Then he gets a little acoustic guitar when he's 11. You know, and did this. You know, he's just a typical middle-class kid learning to play music like all the other kids were doing his age. Born in 1946, post-war England.
Mm-hmm.
Went to art school, guarantee you that.
What's with the British people in art school?
Ah, see? But so he had a normal upbringing, right? And everything was cool. He started playing in the local bands and things were great.
Yeah.
And then he, you know, but he met... It's weird. In junior high school, guess who one of his teachers was? Roger Waters' mom.
Really?
Roger Waters' mom.
Was one of Sid's teachers. Yep. I didn't know that. Well, they were friends from school then, Roger and Sid.
Chums, sort of.
They were chums.
But he got the name Sid. He got the name Sid because one day he wore a particular cap to school. And... The kids from the poor community, whom they called Sids, wore hats like that.
Oh.
So they called him Sid, and he kind of went, yeah, kick ass. You know? So he went, yeah. So he changed his name to Sid Barrett. And that was just kind of like, hey, you're some sort of Sid? Yep.
Yes,
S-Y-D. Yeah. So, you know, he grows up.
I'm going to call you Sid. I hope you do.
But yeah. So, you know, it's one of those things where then he, yeah, went to school with Roger Waters. So his real name is Roger. He went to one of his teachers was Roger Waters' mom.
Mm-hmm.
Roger Waters went to school. His dad died before his 16th birthday, and they thought it was really odd that he kept a real strict diary. And on that day, it was blank. And that changed his life. They said that moment
God,
changed
sad.
Everything for her.
Oh,
for
boy, him, that just breaks your heart her, to hear that. Him.
Yeah, that his mom was heartbroken, he was heartbroken, it just left the family, because that was a sole provider, it was a rough time back in the day, he was young, right? And so throughout his first few college years, you know, which again, he was in different various bands, and went to art school, in 1964, to art school, post-art school, they became what became... Pink Floyd, and it was they got some free studio time and laid some weird fucking trippy demos down. A lot of the early days, though, you know, they were like kind of improvised jazz. I mean, that was again, that was what 64, 65. The Beatles had come out though, so they were kind of into the improvised jazz, and they were starting to experiment with a little drugs. So they had the pop thing; they totally dug that,
mm-hmm.
but they liked the jazz thing. And Sid was starting to write more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they started playing at this local Prague, pre-Prague, there's that term again.
Oh, pre-Prague.
Right? Hotspot. Okay. And then he got management. So they're going, okay, well, these kids are exciting. They've got this weird, cool, trippy sound, but they have Beatlesque kind of, you know, melodies and harmonies going.
Yeah, yeah.
So they started, you know, catching on and blah, blah, blah. Blah, blah, blah. And then so now 1967, 68. Started, you know, he really started getting into drugs, really hardcore, become sporadic. Now, Pink Floyd, as they were known, was starting to record a little bit, but he was drifting off, and he's doing ass loads of LSD. Ass loads.
Yes, bravo.
Right? Don't applaud that, Hal.
So, like, some of the shows, like, there was one show in particular, he just stood there from the minute they went on stage till their last song. He stood there strumming the same chord. Over.
Oh, jeez.
And over.
Yes, probably.
And they go to the Fillmore.
Don't applaud that, Al.
So they're at the Fillmore West. This is another time. Goes to Fillmore.
They're in America.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but then, you know, somehow they're doing great, you know? They got great management. They got money behind them. And they're groundbreaking in their kind of weird way. So he's unceremoniously just decides the entire show to start untuning his guitar. So bang, bang.
Yes,
there goes the E string. There goes the A string. Right?
I want you to keep doing that for all the strings.
I can't. Just for the drop sake. Oh,
so what about the D string? What about
I don't know. I
what's
can't
that
do?
That. Do?
Wait till we get to the G string, honey.
Ooh, yeah, hey. Woo. Hey now.
So there's another time they were on, you know, they finally, and they're starting to make, you know, actually break through. In America, they're on Dick Clark's American Bandstand. Uh-oh. And Dick Clark is, and he's tripping balls. This guy's tripping balls, Syd Barrett.
And everything went off without a hitch,
no,
right?
No, Dick Clark, because he's kind of the, you know, the de facto leader of the band. He was writing stuff, and they're Pink Floyd, and it's his tunes they're touring on. So Dick Clark's asking him a bunch of questions, and he's just standing there, just like totally standing there. Like, ask me a question, Dick Clark.
So you guys are from England. What's that like over there? What's the scene like now in 1967? Bing, bing.
Nothing. Bing. Nothing. Crickets chirping. Right? Crickets chirping. So, finally the wheels are falling off of Syd Barrett, but Pink Floyd's gaining momentum. So they decide on the way to a gig that what they would do is just not pick Syd up that day.
Understood.
It was just like they didn't fire him. They had a gig and they didn't pick him up. But they picked up David Gilmour, and of course, right. Roger Waters. So it was David Gilmour, though, that replaced him. But it was also David Gilmour that produced this album, helped produce this album and the previous album.
Oh.
And David Gilmour, the guy that I think really the only guy, there's a bitterness between Gilmour and Roger Waters to this day. And I kid you not.
There sure is.
I believe with my whole heart, part of it is about Syd Barrett, because David Gilmour is the guy, you know, Roger Waters knew him as a kid, and it was that. And I think Roger Waters, I think David Gilmour, the guy that got the gig because of Syd's, whether he mentally fucked up, because he was in institutions, man.
He was a schizophrenic, yeah.
But, you know, you can't say acid didn't help.
I think it assists.
Or maybe
it gets the assist.
Or maybe it completely caused it. So, you know,
who
drugs
knows?
Are bad, okay? So, but David Gilmour comes in, replaces the guy, and I think, and always to this day.
You think Roger Waters still harbors animosity towards David over the replacing?
Well, up to
this is horseshit.
Actual audio. Thanks for Roger. Yeah. Thanks, Roger, for chiming in.
This is garbage.
But up until you know Syd's dying day in 2006, you know, David Gilmour was always the guy that made sure that the checks got sent and that they got cashed, because Syd moved off back to Cambridge, helped his mom till, you know, she died, and was gardening. That was his thing. It's like, and when people, he changed his name back to Roger,
mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not Syd Barrett, I'm Roger, you know, and I think David Gilmour was always sympathetic about that and understood. I mean, look how huge, huge Pink Floyd became.
Oh my God! Yeah.
Fuck.
Right. Yeah.
And you don't slap high five to a fucked up dude and go, thanks, man. You know, you take care of him. And
right. Yeah.
God bless David Gilmour for that. I have so much respect.
So is there truth in that Roger didn't really
give a rat's ass from what I've read. And
really?
I'm not going to say that about it because I don't.
You don't know.
Really,
for sure. Nobody knows
and
for sure.
I don't give a fuck enough about it.
Well, I can tell you, man.
Razzle that.
I got no love for Roger Waters. As a lyricist and a songwriter, I have a lot of respect for him. But as a human being, I think he's a pretentious fuck that needs to shut his mouth.
Look
Thank
at you.
You. I hate that motherfucker. In interviews, he's such a fucking dick, man.
Really?
I hate him.
Roger Waters.
Yes, Roger Waters.
Really?
He's an asshole.
How's he an asshole? What'd he say?
I watched it. There's this long. Oh, AD loves this. He loves it when I get mad.
He's relishing it.
He's so happy. I watched this long form interview on PBS or something with Roger Waters and some other dude, and they got to talking about world politics.
Oh,
and
I'm not saying that world politics with a cock.
Well, no. I mean, I don't care about politics. You know, I don't have a dog in the hunt. Okay, right. But it's shit like this where the interviewer. They were talking about Hamas, right? Yeah, and all the stuff in the Middle East.
That's like Sammy Hagar's band in the 80s, right?
So Roger, you know, when you have these outfits like Hamas and blah, 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 and Roger goes, it's Hamas.
Oh, what he said?
Yeah. He corrected him on its pronunciation of how ironic I messed up pronunciation. I mean, just little shit like that. I'm like, you pretentious cocksucker. Who the fuck do you think you are? Shut your mouth.
My favorite moment in the history of Shadow.
Hey, rant of the year next year. Right?
Yeah.
But I love his work, man. Animals is brilliant lyrically. Yep. I mean, and musically. I love his work.
You know,
but
in the whole story of Syd Barrett is supposedly captured in, you know, the entire Wall album.
Yeah. And that's great, too.
Whether it is or not.
Too. Wish you were here.
Yep. Wish you were beer. So anyway, I'm going to play Baby Lemonade from the actually it's the Syd Barrett's sort of on part of a compilation album called A Good Harvest from Harvest Records. Came out in 1971. I'm guessing distributed and owned by and ruled by EMI. And this track was again produced by his pal David Gilmour.
All right.
Sun going down when the earth streams in.
like a ghost.
Cool. Sid Barrett.
Those records are sometimes really cool, and then other times feels a little like exploiting.
This was kind of a cool pop single, and it really showed his pop mind. It showed he was a big fan of the Stones and the Beatles. You know, the old, hey man, Beatles or the Stones? And he was like, both, dude. And Miles Davis.
Mm-hmm.
So fuck off, you know? And so piss off, mate. So, you know what's cool about the intro of that? That little acoustic-y, kind of jammy, little bluesy intro. David Gilmour, Sid came in and just that was a little warm-up that David happened to roll tape on. And nice. He just, you know what, I'll throw that at the top of the tune and cool little intro to that.
Nice.
But I like it. It's a pleasant little tune from a compilation album from the Mott Tower, Harvest Records, A Good Harvest. EMI Harvest Records, 1971-ish.
Pretty cool.
I've found different covers, but not that same cover, so I think 71, okay. Maybe 72 at the latest, but great, Sid Vicious. Handsome Dick Manitoba.
Right as usual, sir.
Fuck's sake. Sid Barrett. God damn
On
it.
That note, we'd like Jesus. To thank you guys for tuning in to the Savvy Road Record Show.
How automatic is that?
Number 78 is in the books officially. And thank you guys for leaving reviews on iTunes and clicking through our Amazon.com link from our website, shabbyroadrecordshow.com, which helps us keep the lights on here at the old shithole. And I'm looking across the room, and I got one yokel sitting over here on the Astrovan bench seat by the name of Sean Hogan, who came down and got into a spirited conversation about Sid Barrett and Pink Floyd during
wearing
that
a Pink Floyd t-shirt, of all things.
Serendipity, yeah. And next to him is the lovely and talented Ricky Serrano. And he's brought with him the mean old sod, Hal 5000.
That's how we're almost finished. Good golly, Miss Molly.
Yeah, that's right, Hal. And who's over on your side of the room?
Well,
there,
we have the world-famous Mark Damian Brooks.
Yeah.
Wearing a kick-ass Alice Cooper shirt, by the way.
Nice.
And, of course, our newly, freshly returning liquid mistress, Miss Liz Morgan. Where you been, honey? Where you been? Well, you notice tonight we're more hammered than we've been lately, so it's good to have you back.
All right, well, that's going to just about do it here. I'm looking across the room, and I'm seeing a man, so if he corrects my pronunciation on a Hamas one more time, I'm going to punch him.
I'll stab you in the neck with a knife.
What he said, what Hal said. That's Mr. A.D. Adams over there.
Ryan, I would never correct you, for I am the most wrongest fucker on the planet. Let me tell you something. I'm either tripping balls like Sid Barrett right now, or I think I'm looking into the black side of the room or the dark side of the moon and seeing what appears to be a 12-foot, two-headed liquid Ryan McKay. Whoa. Freaking me out.
Horrifying image.
But it's not, it's just you. You're my pal. Happy trip after all.
Yeah, right on.
Damn, that was scary for a minute.
All right, we'll see you guys on episode number 79. Nan. 79.
Nine.
Nine.
Nan. Nan. Nan.